Steve Flemmi, we've talked about, pled guilty to the murder of Roger Wheeler and is serving a life sentence.
In upstate New York, he pled guilty on the condition that he would never have to see the inside of the walls at McAllister. I guess McAllister has quite a national reputation for being a place to not want to be. Flemmi and I, again, Flemmi sends me Christmas cards every year. Flemmi likes me. These guys knew I was not part of their corrupt world. I was focused on a mission that they saw me remain focused on for nearly three decades. When they saw me in court, hey, there's Huff. They would point me out, and I could see it. You know, they'd give me a wave and a nod.
And, of course, Whitey goes on the lam for 16 years, and then he was finally arrested June 22nd of 2011. He is in trial as we speak today. The first day of trial was yesterday. The Tulsa Police Department gave you all the resources, and they let you go. Somebody in the department had to say, Huff, go after this.
I tell you what, they certainly did. This spanned many chiefs. Chief Harry Stege was involved in it. He tells a great story about when I was in South Florida trying to interview one of the most well-known mobsters ever, Meyer Lansky. He had gotten a call from the Miami Beach police chief complaining about me. He likes to tell that story. But through Chief Dick, Diamond very reluctantly.
Drew Diamond?
Yes, Drew Diamond's span as being chief was kind of volatile, but it was also in a time frame that there wasn't a whole lot that was going on with the Wheeler case. After that, Chief Palmer, wonderfully supportive guy, and really understood, maybe it's because he came from Kansas City where there is a bit of organized crime. He understood the commitment that we need to make, and he made it wholeheartedly. Same way with Chief Bean. Chief Bean grew up watching this thing. I mean, he was there start to finish. He knew what was going on. Then Chief Palmer came back, still was supportive. Right to the very end with Chief Chuck Jordan. I mean, he knew every step of the way of this case. You know what? The police department, with all the troubles that they may have and all the ways that politics get involved, the chiefs of police, really, as far as homicide investigation, it was Katie, bar the door. You do what you need to do. And they trusted me. As a result of that, I had to find people that I could trust on these other cases. And we built a nationally recognized homicide squad. Not just on this case. We solve over 80% of the homicides, and the national average is 58%. If it's 58%, somebody's solving about 25% of the murders.
Mm-hmm. About Johnny Martirano, I noticed where Whitey Bulger's attorney, J.W. Carney, accused prosecutors of engaging in a cover-up of an allegation that John Martirano, who had killed 20 people, had committed crimes since his 2007 release from federal prison and has been shielded from investigation.
Well, I tell you what, on the way over here, I was thinking, I'm aware of this allegation. I certainly can't vouch. I have no details that Martirano has or hasn't done. But they're accusing a state police lieutenant by the name of Stevie Johnson as covering up. Well, I've known Stevie Johnson for 20-some years. He's not my friend. We're not buddies. But he is honest to the core. He would not cover up anything. He has lived and died with this case on a greater level than I have because it encompasses all those racketeering crimes. But, I mean, he's at ground zero in Boston. I could go stir up stuff in Boston and come home and nobody'd ever know about it. He had to live there. So that J.W. Carney allegation is a defense attorney ploy. I'm going to write a letter to the Boston Globe or Boston Herald and say, I've known this man for 20-some years, and to besmirch his reputation like that in a defense attorney ploy is terrible.
It's a Whitey ploy, isn't it?
Whitey is not going to pick a defense attorney that won't go with his game plan. Whitey's got the game plan. It's the best defenses go on offense. That's Whitey's deal.
While we've been talking about all this and talking about the fact that Whitey Bulger was an informant, the opening day of testimony yesterday was Bulger saying he was not an informant for the FBI.
Yeah, that he was just using them to get information.
Right.
Once he corrupted them, that was his goal, was to use them to get information. But his meal ticket was providing information on the La Cosa Nostra. Didn't provide one bit of information on his world of criminal activity and his associates' world. So Whitey Bulger is two things. He is a self-serving, egomaniac, liar, narcissistic, so that's a little bit more than two. But that's the Whitey Bulger reputation that I know is factual. So he's going to try to turn this around. It reminds me so much of a political debate. Somebody confronts the next person with well-documented facts, and they turn it around and call you a liar. It's like, where'd that come from? This is vintage Whitey.
You are on the defense list to be a witness. And what's the manipulation going on here?
That's a strange situation there. The government probably I can just open up too many cans of worms. You know, I don't want to get in the way of this justice that's being meted out. I think that the federal judge has really got her hands full, and I haven't heard anything bad about her. But Whitey knows that I have been a thorn in his side. This is going to be his opportunity to stick a knife in my back and twist it. This will be an opportunity for him to, I guess, try to embarrass me. I don't know what I can be embarrassed about. I'm retired. I don't have any big skeletons in my closet. So I look forward to it. There was a column in the paper about what in the world will Whitey ask Mike Huff. Well, Whitey want to know where Mike Huff got the information that he had bad breath and he hung out at nudist colonies. This is all just entertainment for Whitey. Whitey knows he's going to die there. This is his last hurrah, and I'll be a little bit a part of it, but That's it.
This changed your life. That day you looked into Roger Wheeler's car, from that very moment to where you're sitting here today.
It did change my life, for the good, for the bad. I guess the thing that it did, it let me have the feeling of not giving up. I felt guilty through my life for things that I've given up on. You know, I've always wanted to go back to college. I wanted this, I wanted that. You know what? I didn't give up on this deal. That night that it happened, I sat down with Sergeant Roy Hunt, who was an icon of homicide investigators at the police department. I said, Sergeant, I got to be involved in this deal. I know I'm the youngest guy, but please let me be involved. This is a game I don't want to watch from the sideline. He gave me this lecture about how this was going to change my life, how I really need to think about it. And if I showed up at 11 o'clock the next morning, I could become part of the game. But if I didn't show up at 11 o'clock, he understood. Now, I didn't understand that conversation at all until years later when I was watching a movie. It was The Untouchables, and Kevin Costner was playing Elliot Ness. Sean Connery was playing an Irish cop, which I got a little bit of that in me. They're getting ready to bust through a door on a search warrant. Turns out the door that they're busting through is a door into the post office where they were storing illegal whiskey or whatever. Sean Connery says to Kevin Costner, man, you've got to think about this. This is going to change your life. It was almost verbatim the same thing that Sergeant Roy Hunt had said to me. And Kevin Costner had the same bewildered look when he's listening to this that I have. So I thought, oh, my God. And then you go through the rest of that movie, and it's like, oh, it changed his life. Threats and this and that and whatever. So, yeah, it changed my life. It's left me with a lot of good memories. I was in the midst of one of the biggest things in this era, and I think I won.
Even without this story, you have many other stories that we certainly could talk about. You've been injured chasing the bad guys, and they've broken into your home and all that kind of thing. So we could do another story just on Mike Huff without this story at all. I would imagine the Wheeler family must be indebted to you.
That thing is so raw still. I don't believe that anybody's indebted to me. I don't think they feel that. I mean, information comes and it cuts both ways sometimes, and it's hard. I think the Wheeler family has done their best to try to repair, resolve, all that stuff, but I don't think it ever come to an end. There are some cases where at the end of that murder investigation, when that guy goes away or goes to death row or whatever, it's real clear cut who's a good guy and who is a bad guy. And the family, absolutely, they love me and they'll love me forever. This isn't one of those cases. This was a train wreck.
Will David Wheeler go to the trial?
He said he won't. There's still a lot of unanswered questions there. We're not ever going to be to the end of this story. Resolution is not really ever going to come to this thing because there are so many things. The secrets are still buried. I think David very simplistically thinks that all secrets should come out, but it's a narrow slice. The Wheeler case is a narrow slice of Whitey's racketeering charges. That's it.